morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, we're here. Democratic Perspective. We have a great show this morning. We want to say, hey, Steve, hope you're having fun on your barge to Luxembourg. And we'll see you back in a couple of weeks. But I'm going to explain this. The name of the show is Democratic Perspective, and we have Randy Garrison, County Supervisor for District 3. We have Brandy Bateman, his executive assistant, here this morning. We don't often have Republicans on the show. In fact, we don't shy away from politics on this political show. So we're having a Republican on by virtue of a couple of things. We've had Republicans on, I guess, by accident in the past. We had a couple guys running for fire board or school board or whatever, men and women. And we've had groups of them on. And so because they were nonpartisan positions, we've had Republicans on. But by virtue of Randy's position and by virtue of, Mike Cosentino is saying that by virtue of him being Randy Garrison, he's on Democratic Perspective because he's an iconic guy here in the Verde Valley. Longtime family. We're going to talk a little bit about that history. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the county. And of course, Brandy Bateman is here to keep us all on the straight and narrow and keep us accurate because there are lots of things going on. But before that, we do want to, this is September 9th. Certainly you're starting to hear in media a lot about September 11th and remembrance ceremonies and those kinds of things. There are lots of things. And I remember, one of the mantras of September 11th, 2001 was never forget. And so those of us that remember that want to remember to not forget. And we want to keep that sort of out there. Now, what September 11th meant and what it continues to mean is a subject of controversy and a whole bunch of it. It's yet another divide between conservative and progressive in America. But so we're going to leave that for another show. We just want to at least acknowledge and remember that attack and those nearly 3,000 Americans that died on that day. All right, so let's get into some. So we're going to talk a little bit about politics. We're also going to talk about what's going on in the county. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brandy Christine Bateman.
Good morning.
There we go. All right. I've known Brandy from the high school days. The next full disclosure here. Randy lives on my street, so if you don't think this is a small town, every once in a while we're reminded of just how small it still is, a small area.
Still a small community. Yes.
Still a small community in many, many ways. So let's, once again, getting political, in a way, you're kind of always fighting for your political future, I think, maybe more so now. Having an R after your name, being a Republican in Yavapai County, meant you were a shoe-in to almost any office, partisan or not. Not so much anymore. I think you're running into, and I told you before the show that I was going to use the word hate because it does seem so strong to me. And you can modify that if you like. But as these developments come to you, it seems that whatever people who don't agree with it are a little angrier than they've been in the past. What's going on?
I don't know. You know, I think
having an R or a D behind your name used to be kind of a sign of a platform that you subscribe to, and now it just seems to be that politics has become divisive. It isn't about a platform anymore. It's just about hate. It's you hate those and they hate you and we fight over sometimes the most inane things instead of just trying to figure out how do we make both sides happy and make something work that serves the people of the community or the people of the county or the people of the state or the people of this country instead of just fighting.
Well, that's it. I mean, a moderate Republican like yourself, or like I see you anyway, used to be, I mean, I've been in Northern Arizona for 50 years. Obviously, I had to learn how to get along with moderate Republicans and, or moderates of any stripe. And I like to think I have. And now, my friends do look at me sideways, when I talked about having you on the show, they sort of shook their head and walked away like, oh yeah, okay. And this is a Democratic perspective show. People are looking to have an opponent, a Democratic or at least a non-Republican opponent, for you in the next election. Let's talk about this little stuff is coming from. You said you just went through. Let's talk about VerdeConnect. I want to talk about VerdeConnect. I want to talk about the Village of Oak Creek. I want to talk about any other development. We're going to talk about those developments and some of the of what you went through, and then the process. Because I know that you can talk about the process. But what were some of the things that came out, let's say, in the Village of Oak? Now, look, someday I'll give you a chance to talk, I promise. So, I mean, from a moderate perspective, as progressive as I like to be on many things, you had them. They were building a hotel in the middle of a hotel district on the main street of a town in the Village of Oak Creek. Didn't seem like it would be controversial, but why was it?
So back in the day, the county at one point in time in the 60s had no zoning. The entire county had no zoning. If you want zoning, you became incorporated. You created a community and you created a government, and that government would come in and lay down zoning and lay down ordinances and rules that governed that area. And that's how you set yourself apart. Always subscribe to the idea that the government closest to people is going to serve the people the best. But the county, the way we do things, we're very rural. We have to service everybody the same, regardless of whether they live in Wickenburg or Ash Fork or Seligman or Mayor or Crown King or the Village of Oak Creek, for that matter of fact, and Verde Village. We have a very diverse community or set of communities right here in the Verde Valley. I mean, going from Jerome at one end of the valley to Sedona at the other, I mean, it's about as diverse as you can get. So, but there's a lot of underlying and common themes that run through these communities, and the feeling of community is one of them. So I wanted to back up for a minute. You talked about me being an R. I want to point out that I was raised in a family of D's.
Ah.
My great aunt was the first woman legislator for the state of Arizona, elected before we had the 13th Amendment ratified.
Wow.
And she ran as a Democrat in Prescott and served that political party. And my dad was a Democrat. My whole family was. My grandfather was a Democrat. I'm kind of the first one that's gone the other direction, so to say, at least publicly. Let's go that route. But I think, you know, I was raised in business. I was raised in a family that ran businesses, and I think that gave me a little more conservative feeling on how I wanted to regulate myself, and then getting on school boards and then ultimately city council, you know, that continued to change, and it became a little more important that I identify, you know, what I believe in my platform, and And I think at that point, platforms still mattered. I don't know that they do anymore. It just seems to be a way of differentiating yourself, not as a way of standing up for something. So
That's a good point. I'm sorry that platforms don't matter. But you did come through the Mingus School Board. You came through the Cottonwood Oak Creek Board. You came through the Cottonwood City Council. And here you are at the county supervisor level. We want to talk about someday, we've talked about before, those layers of government and how government works. The county, last time I looked, and I said this on the last time you were on, that there was 38 departments in the county. And these are departments that mostly their purpose is to serve the population of that county. But still, county government is probably the least understood. We're not going to do it in 40 minutes here on the show. We're going to talk about other things. But I'm not sure, and we'll, someday we'll, you know, we got federal, we got state, we got county, we got municipal. So when you talked about levels of government, those are the things that organize our lives. Those are things that give us the things we need and want. And one of those things is controlling and keeping an eye on development. So.
Well, and you're right. I mean, the county, you know, it's probably the least understood form of government we have. But, I go to meetings and we host meetings and we bring in legislators. We had a meeting in Old Town last week with the, mayors and councils of all the Verde Valley, and we had three legislators come in and talk to us about legislative issues, things that are happening in these communities, especially the Verde Valley, that we want to see some change in, and how do we get that message through to them so they can take that back. The county, really my job, I didn't fully understand, I guess, exactly what my role was when I ran for this position, but like I said, a community incorporates, it becomes, it elects its own government, and that government puts in rules and procedures and practices and policies that govern that community as defined by that community. Where the county, we don't make rules. We take what rules the state gives us and we bring them down to the local level. And so my job really is to become that bridge between the legislature, who's making these rules, and the federal government, and the cities and the communities within our area that want something changed, because I can't make that change. So we go into the communities, we find the problems, and we'll talk Airbnb is a big problem. It's
yes,
a community
it is.
Concern. It's changing the shape and the face of our neighborhoods. And so we hear that message, then we go back to our legislators, and we try to explain to them exactly how it's affecting our communities and why it's important that we change that. And then hopefully they listen to that. Hopefully they can convince enough other legislators to take up the call and do some legislation to change things. And hopefully you get a governor that doesn't fight you every step of the way. But if it works and it works well, then changes are made. That's brought back down to the local level. And we get to help those communities institute those changes and hopefully create a positive outcome of it. And if not, then you figure out where it went wrong and you try and tweak it and you go back and you start the process all over again. And unfortunately, government moves very slow, especially when you're not the maker of rules. So, you know, it's a long process, but it's a rewarding process to hear a community outcome or a community outcry of a problem or a concern and then be able to go to those legislative branches, explain to them.
What's going to happen on Airbnb? We've had two or three shows on it. And we're going to, you just said, I would consider one of the successes of where a community went to the county and came back satisfied was El Rojo Grande. That was certainly a thing you can put in a plus column as far as what the community was after. Airbnb is a whole other story. Like you just said, it's changing the face of many communities. Where is it right now? What's going to happen?
Well, I don't think you're going to see a whole lot happen, unfortunately. I think, the governor's really dug his heels in on it. Huh. He came into office on the premise of a shared economy, Uber, Airbnb. You know, he decided that this state was maybe too diverse in its rules and regulations. And he felt that it was important as a citizen of Arizona, if you wanted to go from Seligman to Prescott to Sedona, you shouldn't have to relearn the rules. You shouldn't have to relearn the procedures and policies that are in place and what you can and can't do. We had the same problem with texting while driving. You know, the state finally stepped in and created a little more of a blanket rule so that people understood no matter where they were in the state of Arizona, texting and driving wasn't a good thing. You didn't have to worry about what boundary, invisible boundary you crossed and what rule you were going to break. So the governor kind of came with that same premise. He wanted everybody to be on an equal footing to promote economic development in industry and business. And it was fairly successful in a lot of ways. Unfortunately, the Airbnb thing kind of got away from everybody. It opened a Pandora's box, and it is what I consider completely destroyed neighborhoods. But that's also a localized phenomenon. You know, Sedona, you know, we have in my district specifically, we have two of the top five tourist attractions in the state or in this district in the Verde Valley. Right. We get a tremendous amount of visitors that come here. And so you already have this industry that's ripping along, bringing people here. And now you open the door and allow people to turn their house into mini hotels, and they're going to do it. And not only are the people going to do it, but the business members of the business community is going to come in and they're going to say, I'm going to sit there and fight a Patel project like in the Village or a Hilton or any kind of a resort. I'm going to fight that through the community. I'm going to fight that through planning and zoning. I'm going to have to fight the permitting and then get it built and finance this whole thing the whole time. Or I can go buy 10 houses in a neighborhood and open tomorrow. And that's exactly what they're doing. And now they're building houses specifically for the purpose of being mini hotels, knowing that they can get around the rules as they currently exist.
Wow. So that, just to be clear, there are entities that ordinarily and in times past under the older rules, they would have done the process by opening a hotel, and doing all the things you have to do to get a commercial hotel going and have that property in a neighborhood that's commercial or in an area that is. But now, because the Airbnb process is simpler, cheaper, and faster, which is all kind of things business likes to hear, you have, which to me subverts the whole concept of Airbnb. The idea was for Brandy Bateman or Mike Cosentino or Randy Garrison, the three people on the show this morning, to maybe make a little extra money. You got a spare bedroom. It's kind of nice. You know, you got a nice looking place. You can rent it out. That was always the kind of the concept of Airbnb. The customer got a unique experience. The owner got to make a little extra money. That's the concept of Airbnb that's been buried and lost in all of this. As, like you said, wholesale developments of Airbnbs by commercial entities was that intended? Did Ducey intend that, Brandy?
Well, keep in mind when you talk about sort of going around the rules, one of the other things that there is happening is that it's a public safety issue because you have these huge houses that are being built, and they're being built to house lots of people for a short period of time, but there's no regulation for them to make sure that they have fire suppression systems or that they even have, you know, a fire extinguisher in the home.
Sure,
and
right.
So,
yeah.
So you create a situation where the public is at risk.
But the one that came to Democratic Perspective, you know, via the mayor of Sedona, via Sandy Moriarty at that time anyway, was a commercial development was built in the iconic neighborhood of the Chapel neighborhood, you know, six or seven bathrooms, eight or nine rooms, and all under a residential a moniker as far as the county was concerned.
Eight rooms, eight baths, each bedroom has its own bath, each bedroom has its own outside door.
Oh, there you go.
And the owner of that, the builder of that, has the next two lots. So he's going to be building three 8-bedroom houses right next to each other. He's, you know, building a 24-room motel right in the middle of a residential neighborhood. You know, you have in Sedona, you have upwards of, say, 6,000 homes. the last number that was thrown out was about 1,800 of those homes have been converted to Airbnb. The entire home, not a bedroom. And you got the Village of Oak Creek at about, say, 3,500 homes, maybe. And you know, the number I've heard over there is 900 of those homes being converted. You no longer have neighborhoods. You know, I remember when Cottonwood Ranch was built in Cottonwood and it came in and it was kind of the first real neighborhood community that I can remember. Verde Heights was kind of a pseudo neighborhood, you know, Snow Hill.
Right.
but when Cottonwood Ranch came in, it kind of took off, and you would drive through there in the morning. And my job I had at the time, I was always out real early in the morning. I'd drive through there to get from one place to the next, and there would be people standing on the corner chatting. It was their morning thing, you know, taking the dogs out. They go for their walk and they'd meet on the corner and kind of like a coffee chat, you know, but they didn't have the coffee house. They just meet on the corner. And now you don't know who's in your neighborhood anymore. You don't have a neighborhood. I mean, you just talked about we live in the same neighborhood and, you know, we got a chief of police. We got an insurance salesman. I can name almost every single person in our block.
Yeah.
But you can't do that in a lot of communities anymore. You just can't. And that's unfortunate because people move to a community because they like the feel, they like the culture of that community. But when you lose all your residents, you lose your culture, you lose your reason that you moved there other than you got a great view.
The numbers you're talking about, it's about 25-30%, you know, a quarter to a third of these communities. With the numbers that you're talking about are becoming Airbnbs. The other ancillary part of this that we don't believe the governor looked at was the affordable housing thing. Airbnb has sucked out all the affordable housing because it's all going to short-term rentals. And so affordable housing, at least in Sedona, which was already a huge issue, becomes even more critical.
Well, there's no such thing as affordable housing in Sedona. So, you know, the average house of a property in Sedona right now, house is about 516, I believe. You know, you can't work a service industry job, which is what most of the jobs in Sedona are, unfortunately. You can't work one or two of those jobs, even with a roommate or two, and be able to afford that type of a structure. And so, you know, 80% of the workforce for Sedona does not live inside the city limits of Sedona. They have to be imported. And it used to be Cottonwood was the bedroom community. Now Cottonwood's gotten too expensive, and then it moved to Camp Verde. Now Camp Verde's getting too expensive. You know, we did you talked about Verde Connect project. You know, this project was put forward. It's been in the works for 20 years as being a proposal for a new pathway around the Verde Valley, a new connector link that would open up and create a more efficient transportation system. But really, the driving force behind it on this last study was the fact that they threw on top of it where people were working and where they were living and how they were having to get back and forth between those two locations. And one of the things it showed was, you know, over the next 20 years, Sedona's population was set to increase about 20%. Cottonwood was expected to increase about 20%, maybe just a little more. Clarkdale, very little, maybe 15%, 10-15%. Jerome, maybe two people. Verde Village is not much, but Camp Verde was expected to see about a 40-50% increase in population. But you get into Cornville and Lake Montezuma, McGuireville, Beaver Creek, Rimrock, you're talking twice, you know, double population over the next 20 years. And it really hinges around property that's available and the price of property that's available.
Right.
You know, if you come over here, a lot in Sedona could cost you $400,000 if it doesn't have creek frontage or a creek view. Cottonwood, that same lot will cost you anywhere from $40,000 to $100,000. But Rimrock, you can go buy one for $15,000. Where do you think you're going to build if you're trying to build a house on the ground that you can afford and pay for with a service industry job? You just can't do that in Sedona, and it's getting harder to do in Cottonwood. And
two questions before we get any further. I asked you. You told us the state of Airbnb. Can you take a look at your crystal ball. What are you going to? What's the governor going to do? What's the county going to do?
No, the county can't do anything about it, unfortunately. So it's other than we can lobby our legislators. So we sat down with Karen Fan the other day for a good hour and talked to her about the legislative sessions coming up. We go down to the legislature almost weekly right now, and it's starting to come into legislative sessions again. So we'll be starting that up, I think, next week. So we will be spending a lot of time with the legislature, but this is an election year. So they're not expecting to get a whole lot done this year because they're going to have to be very careful about where they spend their time, and they're all running for office. So I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of movement. The problem is the governor opened that you know, put the genie in the
without
bottle.
Without asking anyone, and, by the way,
And it was a premise that had some validity to it when it went in. I mean, with the idea that you were going to rent out a room or rent out your guest house or, right. You know, it was going to be that type of thing, but it turned into something completely different. And so now how do you get that rectified without, you know, we also have a rule in the state that says if you have a property right and you put a rule in place that takes away that property right, you have to pay somebody for that. And so now you've got to figure out how do we change the rules after we open the door for everything and put some kind of control back on it without being sued, because now we're stifling those businesses that have made a business of coming into this community and buying houses.
So the genie can't put back on the bottle.
I think what will happen, and I think where you'll see things go, I think this is going to be a very slow and a very long process. And I think the governor's aware now of what's happening, but the fix is not easy and it's not simple. It's not going to
just giving
quick.
Back the community.
But I
the
think that's where
to
it's going to be. I think he's going to have to figure out, and the legislature's going to have to figure out how to let each community decide a little more for itself what it wants to be and what's impactful and isn't impactful for it, and allow it to put those rules in place. But that goes right back against what the governor set in motion when he got into office, which was trying to stabilize and bring this common theme throughout the state.
Well, Republicans
so it used goes to, against that.
Republicans used to be famous for local control. There are, and this is the nail in the coffin of that concept, taking away, not allowing them to ban plastic bags, taking away their ability to do what I consider the basic thing every community ought to be able to do, and that's govern how it develops. It's residential living situation, and the governor of Arizona has taken that away from local communities and allowed commercial interests to feather their nests in a way that damages those communities. I want to move on to Verde Connect as the next topic. I spent a long time, 50 years in Northern Arizona, I believe. We've, as I'm concerned, we've always been looking for an alternative route other than 89A, that bridge in Bridgeport, across the Verde River, for safety reasons, among others. And here it was, $25 million. Randy Garrison is occurring in your district under your watch. This is, you know, for some of us, a great thing that we've been waiting for a long time. I do want to mention while I'm doing the talking here that there is a great website. You want to, you might want to check it out. It's informative. It's well built. It asks a lot of questions. It provides us opportunities for you to respond.
VerdeConnect.com.
VerdeConnect.com. Not too complicated. Thank you. So then you ran into resistance. Serious resistance. I'll fill in for you. The Camp Verde Council turned it down for their reasons. So let's work backwards on this. Where is Verde Connect at the moment?
Well, right now we're going through the environmental process, so the project's moving full steam ahead.
You've chosen your route.
The route has been chosen. That was all done through a public process. We had well over 60 meetings with the community.
60 meetings.
60 meetings to try and make sure everybody had the ability to have their voice and share their concerns. And we got a lot of emails. We got a lot of talks on the corners, on the streets. You couldn't go anywhere. Somebody didn't want to ask about it. And there was some resistance, and it was very localized resistance in the Middle Verde area. And so, you know, we tried to listen to everybody, and that's one thing sometimes the loudest voice in the room doesn't understand is they're not the only voice in the room. They're just the loudest voice. And and so, you know, we listen to everybody, and sometimes that goes against what those that are speaking loudly think is the only voice that's to be heard out there. But the Verde Valley has been behind this project since day one. It's been in our transportation planning for 20 years. It's been in Camp Verde's transportation planning for 29 years. 29 years that community has decided that road was impactful for that area. And then once you go to give them that present, then they come back and say, well, we want to listen to this 20 people that sits down on the end of Middle Verde Road, and we don't want you to come through the neighborhood, which we're not. But at the end of the day, we're still going to build the road, and it's still going to get put in.
What's the route going to be?
The route will be, it'll leave Corey Lane, which is where Jones Ford is. It'll traverse north and eastward and tie into Cornville Road and Beaverhead Flat.
That's where Beaverhead.
It'll tie in at that T right now.
Right.
Most of that's Forest Service land, a little bit of state trust land. We won't cross a single piece of private land to build this entire road. It'll all be on public land. And so, like you said, it's been a vision. It's been a dream. When I got into office, you know, probably the biggest cry you heard from people is we need some more roads. We need to fix our traffic problems. The impact by our visitors is so huge to our transportation system here. It just really causes a lot of problems, a lot of havoc for those who live here. And so everybody's always looking for a quicker, faster, easier route somewhere. And unfortunately, because of the topography of the area and the fact that we are 75% public land, it makes building roads sometimes very difficult, especially when we have the environmental issues that we have in this Verde Valley. So, you know, I got into office, and the first thing we did is we started looking at the transportation system and where could we start creating some fixes, where some money's available, and so we put out some studies. We were lucky within the first year we got $4.6 million for Cornville Road renovations. We'll start the engineering this year on that. Hopefully we'll see the construction starting the end of next year and early 2021. That's going to be huge for that road. Two different sections of that road are going to be impacted and be fixed, but it won't be the entire road, unfortunately. You know, $4.6 million only goes so far. We're only going to be able to fix about 4 miles of that roadway. But it's a start. One of the things we also learned is that unless you have a project on the books and the engineering done, it's shovel ready, they like to say. Unless it's there, getting money from other sources is very, very difficult. So, one of the things we did is we started looking at all the studies for the Verde Valley and the transportation systems, and we started looking for that low-hanging fruit, and this was one of them. So we went to the Board of Supervisors and convinced them and the rest of that board to authorize the county to spend, I think it was $1.1 million to do a study for the Verde Connect project. So we could look at it, look at the corridor, look at the area, try and define a pathway, at least a loose design of a pathway, look at the topography issues, look at the environmental issues, look at how we cross the river and what that's going to look like, and at least get something on the ground in the form of a book, a stack of paper that we can put on a shelf and at least say we got a project we can do someday if we get lucky enough to find the money. And so along comes Trump. Trump says, hey, we're going to throw a ton of money at infrastructure. You know, this country needs a boost. We're going to start delegating out some money. And he set aside this build grant money. And so we said, well, you know what? Our project doesn't necessarily quite align with the principles of the build grant, but I think we can change our application a little bit to do that. So we did. We modified the application.
That's
we had a loose path.
The $25 million came
from that. So we put in for that build grant. There was 941 other programs, other projects that were submitted throughout the United States. There was 81 chosen, and there was 12 that got the full amount of $25 million. That was the most we could get, and this project was one of them. They saw the value of connecting these communities, and so we got lucky, got the money. Never thought in a million years we'd get that money, and now here we are. We're moving straight ahead with this project, and I think we'll provide provide a outcome that, that people are going to be happy with in the future. You know,
so it's going to start at Jones Ford. It's going to cross a lot of land nobody's ever seen, but it's going to poke out there on the Cornville Road, the McGuireville Road, whatever you want to call it, right there at Beaverhead Flat. You know, and I remember, as you do, at Beaverhead Flat, to me,
was every time, a two-lane road.
Every time I turn on it, it is paved. I'm surprised.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, when'd they do this? But it's and then it'll get you to 179. Now, at least you will be that close to Sedona, and you can go either way. You can still go back to I-17. You can go into Sedona. But 179 has become a bottleneck.
And it's not going to get better.
It can't get better.
It's just going to continue to be impacted. So really, just we look at the VertiConnect project as just another spoke and a wheel, just going to give other people another route, another option. You know, right now we have about 3,500 cars a day that travel Beaverhead Flat. It's hard to imagine.
It is hard to imagine. And but I believe it.
When they come,
it's a very busy road.
When they come out of the village and they hit Cornville Road, 90% of those cars turn right and go down through Cornville. When they're coming out of Cottonwood and they're going down Cornville Road, 90% of those cars are turning left and going into the village that way. So this is going to, I think, it'll push a lot of that traffic straight through to 260. And then once they hit 260, they can determine whether they want to go left into Cornville or Camp Verde or turn right and go into Cottonwood. But they'll be in Camp Verde at that point in time. So I think it's going to change the look and the feel of 260 a little bit. I think it'll foster some development out in that area. I think it'll be a boon and an impetus for some change and some new industry in Camp Verde, specifically, you know, stores and shopping and commerce. And it'll, I hope, be a significant impact for the Cornville community as well. I think you're going to see that community get back a little bit of the breathing room that it used to have.
That'll make Cornville happy. But things are growing. Things are changing. I don't need to have a degree in engineering to see the changes. What's please share with us if you can. What are some of the other developments? I remember last time you were on the show, you talked about developments on 260. What's going forward? What can we look forward to there? I mean, everybody talks about different, whatever their favorite commercial thing is, whether it's a Target store, whether it's a Lowe's. What do we got coming on 260?
I don't know, because that gets down into the community. So there's, you know, there's discussion that there's a Lowe's coming in. There's discussion of a huge distribution center coming in that area. One of the things that happened, and it happened also within this last year, and we were part of that process, is Trump's put out that he wanted to create these what they call enterprise opportunity zones. It's a tax haven, if you will, a federal tax haven.
McCain talked about those for 30 years before Trump ever.
Right, well, no, I'm not saying it was Trump's idea at all, but he put it on the ground, and so he pushed it out, made each governor responsible for implementing those within the state, and the governor then pushed it out to the counties and made the counties responsible for choosing. We were given five, and we were given three enterprise zones throughout the entire county, which were 8,100 square miles. So, you know, not much at the end of the day. But the whole idea was that you created this tax haven for people to invest, long-term invest in commercial industrial property and different projects. And Camp Verde was the only community on this side of the mountain to get one of those enterprise zones. Prescott Valley got one. Prescott got one. The county kept one, and we put one out in Ash Fork. So with the idea of creating some enterprise in the Ash Fork to capitalize on I-40,
sure.
And bring some new life
there's,
up into that area, that's
now.
Nothing now. So so Camp Verde ended up getting this enterprise opportunity zone, which, by the way, Middle Verde is part of that enterprise opportunity zone. Camp Verde decided Middle Verde needed to be commercial industrial enterprise area. So they're going to see an impact, whether they like it or not out there. It's going to change that community. community. But so far, just in a year, it's brought over $100 million of investment into Camp Verde. Wow. And the whole idea is if you invest your money in that community, say you sell a piece of property somewhere and you do a 1031 exchange, so you exchange that property for value in an enterprise opportunity zone, and you keep that property for 10 years, you can get away without paying taxes, federal taxes on that money at the end of that 10 years if you keep it that long. So you're getting a lot of people that are investing, a lot of businesses are investing in that because it's a great way to add 20% or better to your overhead or your profit at the end of the day. So they've got that huge RV park. You're starting to see a lot of other developments come in that area specifically to take advantage of that opportunity zone. So they're looking at more, but unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see any coming anytime soon. But they're impactful to a community, and Camp Verde definitely is going to receive the benefit of that. So you're seeing some enterprise going in Camp Verde, but almost the entire 260 corridor is inside Camp Verde. So I'm not that aware of what's going on within their town because a lot of times they don't want to talk about it before it's a done deal.
Sure, of course. What's going to happen with Verde Connect? We're talking pristine Forest Service land or state land.
Well, I wouldn't call it pristine. So, one of the things I think that the Forest Service has been supportive of this project from day one is if you go in and specifically if you come in from the Cornville Road, Beaverhead Flat side, it's just sprawl of urban trails and roadways. And
that's true.
And the camping, they have huge residential camping issues out there. You have a lot of sprawl, and in my mind, it's not eco-friendly what's happening out there. You have a lot of destruction of the property and the land. So what's going to happen is we're going to put this path through just exactly like what happened on Beaverhead Flat, and then we're going to end up fencing it, and they're going to end up creating trailheads and access points where you can get into that land in a much more controlled manner. And so I think it's going to it's hard to say, and you're going to have some of your people, especially we got a Jerome council member or two that thinks this is going to be destruction of all wildlife out in that area. But I think to some point it's actually going to be a benefit to the area and to the land and the movement of the wildlife around that area. We drive out there almost monthly, not quite, but we've been driving it for a long time looking at the different routes, the different impacts out there. Yeah. We see mule deer, we see whitetail, we see elk. You hear about the mountain lions. Luckily, we haven't seen one of those yet. But there's a lot of wildlife out there, and it's being impacted, in my mind, negatively by just the way people are accessing that land currently, and this will just create a little better, more controlled way to get into that property and expose it. Like you said, it's beautiful out there. People they're going to be amazed when they get to drive that for the first time and not have to leave Blacktop. I remember, like you said, driving Beaverhead Flat, and that was a two-rut lane, dirt road, and now it's one of the prettiest drives in the Verde Valley, and it's beautiful. This is going to be another addition to that. It's going to be fantastic way to show people the property that they own.
Lots of great trails, by the way, and I like what you just said. The Verde Connect Road will show them the property that they own. You're right. I've never been more than 100 yards off of McGuireville Road or Cornville Road, whatever you want to call it, and I'd love to see the rest of it. Listen, we only have a few minutes left, but we do want to, I believe in some ways, because of the politics of 2019, you're fighting for your political life here. There is a huge progressive movement in Cottonwood and Sedona, not so much in Cottonwood, but certainly Sedona and the village. I think if there's maybe some organized opposition. I did see your sign the other day set up. We don't normally stump for Republicans on this show, but I did see your sign on Main Street in Old Town Cottonwood. You have a little office down there. I'm going to let out the secret that if the Jeep is there, he's there, and if it's not, don't bother because he's probably not there. Or he's hiding, which could be either way. But I we're used to, between Chip Davis and Randy Garrison, some of us see this as just a natural progression of leadership at the county level in the Verde Valley. Others not so much. But Randy Garrison, Brandy Bateman, we want to thank you for being here today. Obviously, there's lots and lots and lots to talk about. We could probably do this show once a week for a year and still not cover everything. I do want to mention that the Democrats of the Red Rocks provide us with support for Democratic Perspective, and we want to thank them. We want to thank all the people. Don't forget to go to our website. We have a lot of information on the show. Go to vvid.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org. We have all our shows archived there. This is live stream on Facebook. You can go to Democratic Perspective Facebook page, and if you missed any part of the show, you can watch it and see the top of my head, which is certainly a thrill. But you can also listen to the show and get the information. Thanks, folks. Please look at the donate button when you go to the website. That's also there. Make use of it. VVID.org. Thanks.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.